From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The first president to pose for a photograph, or technically a daguerreotype, was John Quincy Adams, and he hated it. Too true to the original, he said, comments that no doubt resonate with those of us who grit our teeth through photos today. The presidential photograph evolved from there, from the dignified, composed portraits of Lincoln to the unflinching eye of the candid camera that once caught FDR munching on a hot dog, sending the White House press office up a wall. The latest entry in this lineage of presidential portraits and the subset of unwelcome presidential portraits came out of the jail in Fulton County, Georgia. Of course, we're talking about former President Donald Trump's mugshot. Joining us to put that photo in historical context is Kara Finnegan, the author of Photographic Presidents, Making History from Daguerreotype to Digital. She's a historian of photography and also a professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She recently turned her eye on the Trump mugshot in a guest essay published this past Sunday in the New York Times under the headline, Trump's Mugshot is a Classic Presidential Portrait. Kara Finnegan, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Listeners, if you want to join us, if you have a question or comment about this latest presidential portrait, 800-222-9455 is the number to join our conversation this morning. 800-222-9455. All right. So listeners can go back and listen to your and my entire conversation last year if they want the deep dive into your book. But can you just briefly remind us of some of the big picture arguments you're making about how the presidency influenced the development of photography and vice versa?
Sure. The main argument of the book is that the presidency and photography really grew up together in almost a literal sense. Photography emerged during the early decades of the United States existence. And at each moment when technology was changing, the ways that we made what we now call photographs were changing, presidents had to adapt to those if they wanted to be able to use photography to build the political image. And also in some cases, if they wanted to defend themselves against what photography might do to them or how it might picture them.
So we begin with these sort of staged formal portraits, right? They were not always welcome, as I mentioned, with John Quincy Adams and as you've written about, as compared with paintings. When did that begin to change? When were these things thought of as useful?
Photography really was flagged as useful and valuable early on. When the daguerreotype, as you mentioned, the first form of photography was invented, it was really unstable, which meant that it just took a lot to even get a good image of any kind, much less one that you might want as your kind of presidential representation. But pretty quickly after poor John Quincy Adams passed on, and as we moved into the 1850s and 1860s, it became really clear that photography was a way to communicate something about your status and something about your elite character. But at the same time, because photography was so available to everybody and it was relatively affordable, at least in contrast with, you know, hiring a portrait painter, right? It was also a kind of democratic medium. So really quickly, it becomes a way to circulate your image and to both kind of uphold your standing as, let's say, the nation's leader, as a president, but also at the same time, show yourself to be a man of the people.
But these are still welcome photographs at this point that we're talking about, staged or at least in the control of the president or the presidency. And then you write about how the candid camera comes on the scene. And I mentioned you have that anecdote about FDR and the hot dog, but there are other examples as well, right?
Yeah, so what happens is a lot of the changes in the way that presidents interact with photography occur because photography itself is changing. And beginning in the late 19th century, we end up with cameras that are smaller. We end up with the development of what those of us who were raised in the 20th century know to be roll film and cameras that you could carry around with you to record events of your life, to record movements out in public. And so because the camera becomes more portable and less obtrusive, there's also the possibility that you could really be photographed you know, doing almost anything in public, walking around on the street, appearing at public events. And so what begins to happen is the development of what I refer to as a kind of anxiety about the camera, where presidents in particular realize, oh, when I am out and about, lots of people are going to have cameras, and what if they catch me doing something that doesn't look very presidential, right? So there are stories of photographers waiting outside the White House, for example, to capture images of the president moving around in public in ways that they did much more freely than we tend to think now, right? The White House is very full of security and lockdown, et cetera. So the idea that anyone with a camera could take a picture of you, even though photography is welcomed by presidents in a lot of ways, that idea that someone could take a picture of you at any moment is a little scary if you're trying to preserve, your own control of your political image.
Yeah. And you talk about in the book and in your other work about how this evolves, and this idea of the president showing himself, so far himself, as a man of the people kind of reaches its, I don't know, would you say apex with the White House Flickr account under President Obama, this highly curated collection of images that show the president, being a human being.
Yeah, what's so interesting about that choice on the part of the Obama White House to make those images available during Obama's presidency is that it was pretty unprecedented. So we've had official White House photographers for many decades, and photographers have officially captured images of presidents going back well into the 20th century. But for the most part, those were for the archives, for the museum, for the eventual record of history. And what the Obama administration, I think, realized, partly because of the significance of Obama's presidency as the first Black president, and also, I think, to counter a lot of the visual racism that was directed at Obama during the campaign, they decided, we have these images of this president that we are capturing on a daily basis, let's show people what his leadership looks like in real time. And so they made those available on social media. And that had a lot of positive consequences for Obama, I think largely because of that idea of, we like the idea of the president as a man of the people. And when a president's kind of visual image sort of fits what we already think we know about who they are as a person, then those kinds of photographs can be really positive. And then the challenge, I think, for Obama and for the folks advising him in the White House was that in our digital age of social media, what happens is when we end up circulating these images, then they're out there, right? And anyone can use them. And we have a situation where once the White House releases those images, online, then anyone can use them for anything, creating viral memes and lists online and jokes and a variety of things. So it's that kind of balance I talk about in the book between interactivity and control. And in our current context, that's a really hard balance, I think, for presidents to maintain.
Yeah, well, that's a great setup. Let me just, before we get to that, to take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we are talking today about the long history of presidential portraits. Historian Kara Finnegan wrote an entire book on how photography has defined the U.S. presidency and how the presidency has defined the development of photography. And we've been talking about some of that history. The book is Photographic Presidents, Making History from Daguerreotype to Digital. And we are leading up to the present day. We've been talking about how, formal portraits gave way to the candid camera, which gave way to the Obama administration's Flickr account, putting out all these seemingly candid images of the president, which could then be remixed and reused as people saw fit out in the world. And that brings us to the Fulton County Jail in Georgia. Certainly an unwelcome or unsought presidential portrait. I wonder, as a historian of this area, how were you anticipating this moment?
I think think there are a couple of things I was thinking about ahead of time, one of which was that I got very interested in the fact that getting a mugshot of Donald Trump was so significant to people. So even though this was, I believe, his fourth indictment, the public kind of calling for the photo was fascinating to me. What it suggested was that people, I think regardless, honestly, of whether they supported him or whether they opposed him, wanted to see this photo, wanted to know if there would be a mugshot, wanted to know what he would do in the mugshot. And I think the reason for that, one of the reasons for that is that this was such an unprecedented moment, right? That we have had a president who would be posing for this sort of photo. So I think that's the first thing I got really interested in was why are we so interested in the mugshot? And I think for a lot of people, it was a punctuation mark on in a process that has been largely textual and legal, you know, lots of legal documents and cases and statements. And there was something for people, I think, about seeing that image, which is really in a lot of ways, a mugshot is a portrait, but it's very opposite, right, of the kind of portrait that we tend to associate with presidents, obviously. So that was the first thing. And then I think the second thing was I was interested in how he would use it. So there were a lot of questions about would he smile, would he scowl? He chose to scowl. I was not necessarily surprised by that because I've spent maybe more time than a lot of people studying photographs of President Trump, and that's one of his signature looks.
It is. It was a Time magazine cover image. I mean, almost identical. When I was surprised at how close it tracked to that.
Yeah, exactly. And so what that says is that even in this moment where you would say that in the abstract that Trump should have been sort of at the bottom, right? Like, who wants to pose for a mugshot? He was still trying to control the narrative. And then, of course, he circulated it himself. And he not only did he circulate it on his website to encourage fundraising, but in fact, the website last April, I believe, had circulated a mocked up version of a mugshot. So they were also really invested in the idea of we need a mugshot of our guy so that we can raise money. So Trump has really folded this moment, this visual moment, into his effort essentially to claim that he is being unfairly targeted and oppressed, and for him to, you know, continue to communicate, you know, his erroneous arguments about what happened in the 2020 election.
Yeah, I suppose for, and this is not a necessarily, a political pundit show, but for his supporters or for his perspective anyway, it seems like this is more evidence of the deep state sort of thing. It fits into the message he's trying to convey. I wonder what you make of the fact, like most mugshots, right, thinking more broadly of the category, it's people who are surprised or feeling shame or embarrassment or sadness or something like that. This is typically the worst moment of many people's lives. And so I'm thinking of that. I'm also wondering, I don't know if you've posed for a passport or driver's license photo in the past few years, but definitely since the age of sort of facial recognition, you don't really get to do a funny pose, right? You don't get to choose to smile or jut your chin out to flatter your chin line or anything like that. I wonder what you make of the fact that he was able to assume this, you know, voluntary pose that he's done, as you said, for many portraits before.
Yeah, we might call that past presidential privilege. I'm not sure. I do think that he understood that this was a moment to visually represent himself and to try to control a situation where he normally couldn't control it. And it is a singular image in the sense of it is both exactly what you would expect in the genre, right? The flat lighting, the institutional logo in the corner, you know, it's just this head and shoulder shot. But at the same time, right, it's Donald Trump. And the other thing that I think about in the context of the mugshot in general is, mugshots emerged almost immediately after photography was invented. The police thought, oh, this can be useful to us. And one of the reasons why mugshots were supposedly useful was because it would help you identify criminals. So the other part of the story that's I'm not sure if you would call it ironic, but is we don't need a mugshot to identify Donald Trump, right? I mean, Donald Trump is a very visually recognizable person to everyone on Earth, and yet we still have this formal documentation. So to me, what that says is that, you know, as much as Donald Trump wanted to control the narrative, he also is now enrolled in, you know, this long history of legal images, and he's signed up for that as well.
Yeah. We need to take a break. Can you stick around for a few minutes after the break? We can talk a little bit more about this.
Sure.
All right. This is the 21st Show. We're talking with Kara Finnegan, a professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. More to the point, she is the author of the book Photographic Presidents, Making History from Daguerreotype to Digital, that came out in 2021. And just this past weekend, she had a guest essay in the New York Times under the headline, Trump's Mugshot is a Classic Presidential Portrait. If you want to join our conversation today, the number is 800-222-9455. What did you make of this latest entry in the pantheon, or I don't know, whatever the opposite of pantheon is, of presidential portraits? 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way, because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking with Kara Finnegan, professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and the author of Photographic Presidents, Making History from Daguerreotype to Digital. She chronicles in that book the advent of photographing presidents, which really begins before John Quincy Adams. He was the first person to sit for a daguerreotype, but she also documents there are all these great examples of people wanting to get photos with, sort of posing even with, busts of George Washington and have photographs of paintings of Washington. And she traces that lineage through almost the present day, through the Obama administration and the advent of his Flickr page and the sort of taking control of some of the digital photographic narrative of the presidency. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. Today we are talking about the latest entry in this lineage of presidential portraits. And that is, of course, former President Donald Trump's mugshot out of the Fulton County Jail in Georgia. Professor Finnegan had an op-ed this weekend in the New York Times. Trump's mugshot is a classic presidential portrait. So we were talking before the break about how presidents have been uncomfortable with photos outside their control, going back to the rise of portable cameras. And here you have Trump taking this mugshot, which is unprecedented in presidential history. And he's embracing it, right? He's framing himself as a rebel, reclaiming the narrative, as you say. Do you see this as a blip or an exception? Is this something unique to him? Or is this indicative of a bigger shift in the presidential relationship with photography?
I think it's certainly unprecedented in the sense of having a president indicted multiple times for alleged crimes. And then the mugshot becomes the visual symbol of that. So I think, you know, time will tell how we interpret that mugshot, right? Because if, let's say, Trump goes to jail for some of the crimes that he's alleged to commit, that mugshot is going to be interpreted differently in the future than if, for example, he does not. And that will, I think, happen regardless of how Trump has tried to use it himself in the short term. So I think we can think in terms of the long term. In terms of the question of whether it's a blip, you know, I've been thinking about that a lot. And I think we have to think about how the role of photography in the culture is always changing. So we've had mugshots for, you know, nearly as long as we've had photography. We've had widely circulated digital mugshots for as long as we've existed now in digital culture. And so I think the role of this specific image is really probably going to shift depending on how the medium itself shifts over time. And that might sound like a fuzzy answer, but I think it really connects to my broader point, which is that every era has its own photography. And to the extent that we can keep that in mind as we're evaluating images of the past and images from today, that's a good thing for us to pay attention to. The other thing I've been thinking a lot about is the idea of the mugshot as a portrait. And if we think about the mugshot as a portrait, then that invites us also to think about the extent to which any portrait brings with it a whole lot of connotations about, let's say, the sitter's character, the sitter's past, the sitter's future. And so what I do feel certain about is that Donald Trump will never, moving forward, be analyzed or thought about outside of the context that includes this mugshot.
Interesting. It defines this singularly, even beyond the four separate criminal charges, as we said, 90 something individual counts with which he's been charged. It's this photo that you think will be a significant part of how people think of his legacy in the future.
Yeah, I think it will, right? It'll be the visual illustration that highlights whatever happens next for him. And to the extent that he is a part now forever of the history of the American presidency, that will affect the way we think about the presidency moving forward as well.
What do you make of the photo's afterlife? This, you know, the Trump campaign is fundraising off of it immediately. You mentioned the mock-up that they had done earlier of one when they didn't actually have a booking photo with one of the previous cases. But, you know, there are many third parties using this photo on T-shirts and coffee mugs, some celebrating him, some celebrating his arrest. What do you make of that?
You know, we really are in this culture of remixing and interactivity now, right? And anybody can take this kind of image and essentially do whatever they want with it. I think I'm going to be really interested to see how the image begins to appear in the context of the 2024 campaign, right? Which we know is happening in parallel with all of these legal proceedings. Will people who support Trump be wearing T-shirts with the mugshot on it to his rallies? Will people be carrying signs? Will opponents of Trump be going to events where they're doing the same thing? So I absolutely expect that in this culture of remixing, where people are constantly taking what's out there circulating in the public sphere of images and reworking them for their own purposes, we're going to continue to see it. And as I said, in the context of the campaign, that's going to become really telling. How much, besides fundraising, will Trump officially embrace this image versus how much can we expect, you know, these more vernacular uses from his supporters, let's say.
Kara Finnegan is a professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. She's the author of Photographic Presidents, Making History from Daguerreotype to Digital. Kara, thank you so much for being with us on the 21st show.
You're welcome.